Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to this week's edition of the Baseball America College Podcast. I'm Teddy Cahill. It is April 22nd. We are continuing to roll through in the second half of the college baseball season, and we have a new top 25 over at baseballamerica.com. It is still topped by UCLA, and Stanford comes in at number two. We have a few changes in the top 25 following another big weekend of college baseball, highlighted by Arkansas's sweep of Mississippi State and Texas Tech beating Baylor in a big 12 series. But we will get to all of that as the show continues here. First, though, I want to bring in Dave Serrano and Joe Healy joining me again on the Baseball America College Podcast. How's it going, guys?
Great to be back, Teddy.
Yeah, happy to be here, Teddy. Excited to get to it.
Absolutely. So we can get right into it with the top 25 this week. Again, like I mentioned, UCLA remains number one. Stanford still number two. We have Georgia, Oregon State, and Vanderbilt rounding out your top five, somewhat of a familiar top five. Those teams have been at or around it pretty much the last month or so. And then Arkansas, like I mentioned, on the heels of a sweep of Mississippi State, climbs to number six. The Hogs are leading the SEC West, and they are now up to their highest ranking in the top 25 this season at six. Louisville, Santa Barbara, hanging tough at 7 and 8. Then Mississippi State at 9, and Texas A&M rounds out your top 10. We have three new teams this week. Tennessee comes in at 21. Oklahoma State at 22. They are your Big 12 leaders. And Indiana checks in at number 25. It is the Hoosiers' first appearance this season in the top 25. We are going to start, though, back in the SEC with Arkansas and Mississippi State. Now, Arkansas came into this weekend trailing Mississippi State in the standings. They leave Baum with first place, or in first place, and the Hogs really had a pretty impressive weekend in all phases of the game. Isaiah Campbell got it started on Thursday night with another excellent start, and Arkansas wins a pretty tight game, pretty well-pitched game. Ethan Small and Isaiah Campbell going at it in that one, and Arkansas comes away with a 5-3 win. And then their offense really got it going the next 2 days. They won 12-5 and then finished the sweep with a 10-2 victory on Saturday. They got good pitching throughout the weekend. Bookended by Campbell and Connor Noland in the rotation. And obviously the bats really got going the last couple days, putting up 22 runs. Over the final 2 days, Casey Martin hit a grand slam. They really got some nice contributions from up and down the lineup. The lineup is showing a little more depth maybe than I realized that it would have coming into the year. And Dave Van Horn also told me it's a little deeper right now than he had realized it might be at the start of the year. So that is a very positive sign for Arkansas. And, you know, the Hogs, like I mentioned, into first place just ahead of Texas A&M, which went 2-1 at South Carolina. That was just enough for Arkansas to edge ahead of the Aggies. They will play at the end of the season in a series that will have some serious implications on the title race, you would have to assume, given the way both of those two teams are playing right now. But when we look at this Arkansas team, like I mentioned, they are up to sixth in the top 25. They're fifth in the RPI. Right now, they're sitting at 30-10 overall, looking very much like they're in line for a top eight seed again this year. And that would be big for them because they're 21-4 at Baum Stadium, just very difficult to beat there, as they always are, but especially this season again. What do you guys see as Arkansas's ceiling going forward this year?
Well, I'll start out. I've never been down on Arkansas. I think in our early talks, I thought, you know, they were a team that kind of was getting looked past because the fact, you know, they were an out away from being last year's national champion. And they returned some good pieces. I think the key to where their success is coming from now, especially this past weekend, is they've kind of settled into their pitching. And, you know, Isaiah Campbell has week in and week out gone out and done a good job. But it's been the rest of the weekend series pitching that hasn't performed consistently. I think they got a good start in the Saturday start at a freshman, Patrick Wicklander. And then, as you said, Connor Nolan threw fabulous on Sunday. And I think that consistency is helping them. But you had mentioned this in your roundup about them. It's Casey Martin, for me, that's allowing their lineup to be a little bit, have more depth. He started out the season a little slow. He has worked on a new approach. He's trying to be more driving balls up to the middle, and I think it's allowed him to get back into swinging the bat well, which I think we all know is a big piece to the lineup. They have some other pieces in that lineup too, but I think with Casey Martin can continue to stay hot and swing the bat, I think it's only going to make their lineup work well. And I think they're a scary team, especially if they become a national 8 seed, because as we all know, it's a very tough place to play, to go into Baum Stadium, and they've notoriously have had success in regional play and postseason play when they're at home. So I think, you know, they have a lot of work to still do in the SEC, but I think if they continue to get that pitching and Casey Martin continues to stay hot, the Razorbacks are definitely a team that a lot of people are going to have to deal with as we get later into the season.
In terms of the postseason race situation, I mean, all their top line goals are right there in front of them. They could, obviously, they're in position now to where they could win the SEC regular season title. They could be a top 8 seed in the postseason. All that is right in front of them. And because of that, you have to consider them on the, at least the medium list, maybe not the short list, but the medium list of national title contenders. And if you told me in July that, hey, you know, if I were to, you know, just live under a rock for the next few months, and you told me in July, hey, Arkansas won the national title, I'd believe you. I wouldn't have a whole lot of trouble believing that, because certainly offensively they're among the very best. And, you know, they've been able to patch the pitching together to get it done more often than not. That's why they're here. I think they're a little bit of a cut below teams like UCLA, Stanford, I would even say Georgia. And a big reason for that is Dave talked about the pitching kind of coming together, and it has in spurts. Like this past weekend was a great example of that. But, you know, how much do we trust that to kind of continue? I mean, Wicklander's been good in spots. Connor Nolan's been a little bit up and down. I mean, that start this past weekend was one of his very best, but he's also had starts where he wasn't able to get out of the early innings. And they've got a back in the bullpen figured out with Matt Cronin. Obviously, he's about as good as it gets as far as a closer goes. But, you know, some of the guys that were the bridge guys, like a Cody Scroggins, once he was out of the rotation, or Cole Ramage, have just kind of been okay. And their team ERA is up over 4. So there's a little bit of concern from my standpoint about what happens if this team gets a little bit behind the 8-ball pitching-wise in the postseason, and if they're going to be able to string enough outs together to get it done. I would kind of compare them in terms of where I have them in the pecking order, kind of similar to Oregon State, but the inverse. Oregon State is, you know, the pitching is even with Kevin Abel out, the pitching has really not been an issue. It's been offensively, and it's been Adley Rutschman and then kind of figuring it out game by game. And you just wonder how long they can kind of do that because they keep getting it done. And you kind of wonder how it's happening. It's a similar thing with Arkansas pitching. They just find the outs week after week. But when you get into the postseason where every team you're playing is good, and you know, you're getting everyone's best shot, I just wonder if they're going to have enough to quite get it done at the national title level. Can they win the SEC? Yes. You know, can they be a top 8? Yes. Can they get to Omaha? Sure. But I just think that there's a few teams ahead of them that I would put on that list of national title contenders at this point.
I think that's a good point about their pitching staff. Right now, Isaiah Campbell is lights out, and that is huge. And then behind them, they're throwing two freshmen in Wicklander and Nolan. And you know, I think that, you know, Nolan maybe found something this week. It was just a week ago that he was seen getting two outs and getting shelled at Vanderbilt and getting pulled in the first inning because he didn't cover first base after about 15 pitches. So, you know, there are ups and downs with that. And I think Connor Nolan at his best is certainly capable, but there are also going to be freshman moments, and then there's just the matter of, you know, how do they look later in the year when they have more innings on them than they've ever really had before. And so those are open questions. I think that, you know, they know at Arkansas that they need to find a little more depth. Scroggins right now is banged up. They got to get him healthy. They've got to get Ramage going. Cole Ramage has not been as good as they'd hope him to be. And, you know, he's one of the key setup pieces. And Jacob Kostyshak was out for a few weeks. He's back now, but it wasn't quite as good of a look this weekend. He needs to, you know, shake some of that rust off. And if they can get Scroggins back, Kostyshak and Ramage going, that really helps everything, because at that point, you know, if Wicklander or Nolan slips up a little bit, they have options behind them. But right now, they need to find some more depth. Dave Van Horn knows they need to find some more depth. And they need to find it a little bit. They need to find it in a hurry. They have a 5-game week this week. And so they're maybe they can find something this week with Northwestern State in town for a couple games. But, you know, right now, the top line pieces are really good. And, you know, like Dave mentioned, Casey Martin rolling right now is a huge bit for that offense. He'd been slumping for a while after a pretty nice start to the season, but he put together a big weekend. And, you know, when Martin's going there, you know, to the tune of 11 for 23, like he was this weekend, you know, that helps the lineup, which at the top end is pretty good. You know, if you have Martin going in the two hole, and then you still have guys like Dom Fletcher and Heston Kerstad and Matt Goodhart, you know, that starts to look really dangerous. And then in the bottom third of the lineup, Arkansas got some nice contributions this weekend from guys like Jacob Nesbitt and Casey Opitz. So it's there. The top line, I guess this is kind of where I've been with Arkansas all along. Just maybe there are more top line pieces than I thought. They have stars. There's no doubt about that. The depth is a bit of a question. I think now, though, I've seen enough pieces around the biggest stars that I feel good about where Arkansas is. And then you look at what they've accomplished to this date and what their resume looks like, and the fact that they're in all likelihood lining themselves up to be a top 8 seed. And I feel good about this team getting to Omaha. Then what happens once you get there? You know, obviously that'll be difficult, but I think right now they've positioned themselves very well for a return, and then we'll see what happens once you get into those series. But, you know, right now, coming off of a loud weekend against Mississippi State, Arkansas looking very good. Meanwhile, Mississippi State not looking as good right now. They got beat pretty soundly the last 2 days, like we mentioned. And after Ethan Small, they have some questions in the pitching staff right now. JT Ginn has not been the same for the last few weeks. And ultimately, Mississippi State's offense wasn't able to overcome, you know, Arkansas's offense. They weren't able to outslug them. This is the start of a really tough month for Mississippi State. The next 3 weeks are home against Georgia, at A&M, and then at Ole Miss. Is there any cause for concern right now? And what do they need to do to get out of this rut, or to make sure this weekend doesn't carry over into that very tough stretch of games still to come?
Oh, I think there's definitely a cause of concern, Teddy, just based off of how they've played as late, especially this weekend. And then obviously, welcome to the SEC. I mean, that's what it serves you. I mean, there's no let up. I mean, the league doesn't feel sorry for you when you're not playing well. You still have to play the schedule, and I've lived that. So there is some cause for some concern. The TJ Ginn situation is concerning. He has not pitched well of late, and I think that was the guy they were really leaning on after Ethan Small, who has been pretty good. And he was pretty good in that game against Arkansas, just kind of got away from them a little bit. But they're going to have to figure out their pitching situation. We had talked about that before. Their third starter has always been in question throughout this year. Their bats have slowed down a little bit. So I think there is some cause for concern in Starkville right now, especially with what they have in front of them. And they're going to have to get the ship righted immediately, or they're going to fall farther down in the standings.
So I'm going to do one of those things. You know how they say when you're you know, when you're having a difficult conversation with someone, to sometimes you give them the compliment, criticism, compliment sandwich. Like, that's kind of what I'm going to go with here. So, strangely, you know, they've got Georgia coming up this weekend, which looks real bad as a matchup, considering how good Georgia is. But I think, strangely, it's not a terrible matchup for Mississippi State, just because Georgia's offense is not, relative to some of the other teams in the SEC, such as Arkansas, Georgia's offense is not going to be one that's going to wear you out as much. Now, they can. They've got pieces. I'm not suggesting they don't. But it's not Arkansas's offense in terms, or even Mississippi State's own offense in terms of the depth they have there. So I think it might be a decent series for Mississippi State to kind of right the ship, at least on the pitching side of things. Now, are they going to pitch well enough to win the series? I don't know. That remains to be seen. But it's kind of strangely a decent matchup, considering how good Georgia is overall, for Mississippi State to get right a little bit there. But there is concerns. This is my criticism here, is that, and this is the meat of the sandwich right here. The bullpen in particular has started to slip a little bit, and I think that has a lot to do with, you know, Small and Ginn were just so consistent the first 6-7 weeks of the season, and so the bullpen was really kind of condensed to the point where you had everyone was in their little niche role, and they were, you know, had a specific, you know, number of outs they were looking for this guy to get, or, you know, they were using Cole Gordon strictly for ninth innings, and, you know, Tristan Barlow would come in and get a specific lefty out or what have you. And because they've been stretched a little thinner, they haven't really been able to do that as much. There hasn't been as much of a schedule in the bullpen. And it has started to slip. I mean, you look at Cole Gordon's got the highest ERA on the team now, 5.87, and Tristan Barlow's is at just about 4.5, and Plumlee and James, two guys you've been kind of shuttling into different starting and relieving roles. Their ERAs are both north of 4, and so everyone where they were like a month ago has just kind of slid a little bit. Now, the other side of the sandwich, the bottom bread of the sandwich, if you will, or the top bread if you were building from bottom to top, is that I think, you know, it feels like they've dodged a little bit of a bullet with Ginn, and it seems like Ginn's getting a little bit healthier and a little bit stronger. It's asking a lot for him to return to the form of when I saw him early in the season, when he just mowed down a Texas Tech lineup that's really, really good. That's asking a whole lot. But if he continues to get stronger and get a little bit better as the season goes on and gets his feet back under him, I think some of those issues with the bullpen are just going to kind of work themselves out a little bit, because you are going to be able to return to being more on schedule from a bullpen standpoint. So I think there is an opportunity for them to right the ship here. I don't think this is any sort of crisis situation, but it is a little bit worrisome that the pitching is just not where we saw it early on, which early on made this look like one of the most balanced, well-balanced teams in college baseball. And the offense is still great, full stop. Offense is great. But the pitching just hasn't quite been there. But I think there's the opportunity for it to improve.
Yeah, I also think that, you know, there is this other factor that, like, they have four games against Ole Miss in the next few weeks. And most teams, that would be a very difficult task, especially with three of them being in Oxford. But for the last 3 years, Jake Mangum just doesn't lose to Ole Miss. And, you know, it's hard for me to look at that in any other context right now. And, you know, Ole Miss is also sliding just slightly themselves. And then Mississippi State closes at home against South Carolina. So I think the next couple weeks are going to be tough, really, really tough. You know, Georgia is no joke, but like Joe's saying, it's not the worst matchup for the Bulldogs, for the Mississippi State Bulldogs specifically. And then at A&M, I still am not entirely sure what to make of A&M as a team. You know, they have some very significant flaws of their own, but that's going to be a tough series. You know, they're in College Station, but the way this sets up for Mississippi State, I feel like they can right the ship. This is a team that has been through a ton. You know, all of the upperclassmen or any of the non-freshmen on this team have been through way worse than this. So I think getting swept at Arkansas is not going to phase them too much. They're going to be ready to go this weekend against Georgia. They're going to be back at home at Duty Noble, where they play very well. And it's a big weekend for them. There's no way around that, but especially if you're talking about being a top eight seed, they need to really play well these next 3 weeks. But I think in the long run, I still feel pretty good about this team. I think they can fix some of their bullpen issues, although ultimately this is a thinner staff. They just need to out-hit their opponents. But this weekend, they did not do that. And if they don't do that, Mississippi State can get themselves into some trouble. And so that's something to watch as they go down the stretch, particularly into this, as they continue this very brutal month that they're part of the SEC schedule that they're in. Now, in the Big 12, Joe, you mentioned Texas Tech and how Mississippi State beat them earlier in the season. Well, Texas Tech starting to right their own ship a little bit here this last week against Baylor. Baylor came into the weekend leading the Big 12. They had the difficult task of going to Lubbock. They won on Thursday night in a very tight back-and-forth game. Then they lost on Friday night in a similar, very tight back-and-forth game that Texas Tech walked off. And then Texas Tech really took it to the Bears on Saturday. Run rule shortened game, 13-3 in seven innings. And the Red Raiders pick up a big series win. We talked last week about how Texas Tech was going to get to play a lot at home over the final month of the season. And they immediately took advantage of that, scoring a nice series win against Baylor. Joe, who does that series result mean more to? Does it mean more to Texas Tech that they won or to Baylor that they lost?
I think Texas Tech. You know, it hurts Baylor. It's not nobody wants to lose a series, clearly, but I think with Baylor, hosting for them was always going to be a tough trick to pull off, just because so much of their hosting candidacy, because the RPI is just not quite there, and you knew that they were going to take some lumps in the Big 12, because that's first of all always the nature of the Big 12. It's just competitive from top to bottom, but this year in particular, where things are really condensed. So you knew they weren't going to be perfect down the stretch, and their RPI already wasn't in great position. So you knew that a large part of their candidacy to host was going to be winning the league. And just because the league is competitive as it is, that always seemed like they might have been the slight favorite, perhaps, but they weren't an overwhelming favorite to do so when they were even leading the league. So I think for Tech, it was important because they were, you know, kind of hugging perilously close to that 500 mark in league play, and they do get a lot of home games down the stretch, which is helpful. But also, they had some of the teams you know that you would expect them to handle in their rearview mirror. So they get home games, but they're, you know, some of them are difficult home games. So if Tech is going to host, which they are now in much better position to do, having won that series, they're in, you know, in at 15 in the RPI. They're 9-9 against RPI top 50. They're now back over 500 fully in Big 12 play at 8-7. You know, if Tech was going to host, it felt like they kind of needed to get moving in that direction, because I think it's one of those deals where I think we all believe in the talent there, and we think this is a host quality team when they're playing well, but the metrics needed to catch up a little bit and the records needed to catch up a little bit. And this kind of helped them get there. Just as an on-field note on that, they really were able to make Baylor look like a team that was thin pitching wise. And we know they kind of are, because the Cody Bradford injury, chief among the reasons. Baylor had done a pretty good job. You know, they've inserted some Paul Dickens as a guy in the rotation who's done a good job for them, kind of being pushed into duty like that. They've been able to kind of deal with it and play pretty well. And that was, you know, kind of a big story 2 or 3 weeks ago, like, hey, you know, look at Baylor despite all these injuries. But last weekend was really a time where, especially when you got to that finale and Texas Tech run ruled Baylor, where you looked up and said, oh, wow, you know, I think Texas Tech really did get to Baylor's depth a little bit. And I think that was a big difference there. They made the Bears look like a team that was just a little bit short on the mound.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at what Texas Tech did, that was kind of what you would expect them to do. And their offense really, really impressive over the weekend. They're still searching for it a little bit on the mound themselves, but it was a good weekend overall for the Red Raiders, and they're looking to string a few more of those together as they look to build out that hosting resume. And they're still in the Big 12 race. The Big 12 remains a jumbled mess, but right now Oklahoma State, by virtue of that Baylor series loss and Oklahoma State's sweep of Texas, moves into first place. Dave, you liked the Cowboys a lot early in the season, or coming into the year. You liked this team's potential, and right now they're flying pretty high. They're up to, where are they in the RPI? They are up to 21 in the RPI, 25-13 overall, 10-5 in the Big 12, and it seems like the Cowboys are moving in a pretty good direction overall. As they head down the stretch, though it is a perilous stretch run for the Cowboys. So Dave, just what are your overall thoughts of Oklahoma State and how you see them navigating a difficult final month of the season?
First off, yes, I did like them coming into the season. And part of that, because I knew they were getting a lot of guys, a lot of pieces back that were injured last year. Then also add to the fact that I have a lot of respect for Josh Holliday and Rob Walton. I think those that duo together have, over the years together, have found a way to piece together teams that have been successful towards this time of the year. It's been a weird season for them, though. You know, they started out the season not real well. I was kind of questioning my own judgment on them, and they've kind of been in and out of our top 25. But then it's, when you look, it's the, towards the tail end of April, they're number one in the Big 12 right now. As you said, Teddy, they do have a gauntlet ahead of them. They've got weekend series at Texas Tech, at Oregon State, at a conference, and then at home against Oklahoma and Baylor. So I think we're going to find out a lot about them over the next 4 weeks. But I don't know, you know, again, that up and down kind of season, and not just for the Cowboys, but for many teams around the country, you know, they righted the ship this weekend against Texas, but then Texas looks like a team right now possibly that's spiraling in the wrong way, the wrong direction, that's going to have to turn their ship around in a hurry. But this is an Oklahoma State team that just had a huge blowout victory in a Friday game at Kansas and loses the next two games just the weekend before. So it's kind of hard to figure out, but I think they're starting to piece together enough pitching. Their offense is putting up big numbers like I would expect an Oklahoma State team to do. But I think they're going to have to continue to keep doing this because, as you said, as we both have said, the next 4 weeks are going to determine their fate a lot. And going back to all our comments, talking about Arkansas, talking about Mississippi State, and now talk about Oklahoma State, you know, the one thing, guys, in my experience over the years, come to postseason, you hear me talk a lot about pitching staffs. And, Joe, you brought up a good point about the matchup of Georgia and Mississippi State, and I agree with you on that. When it gets to this time of the year, even these very good pitching staffs, the pitchers are starting to get a little tired. They've logged a lot of innings. They're starting to get tired. And over my experience of my career, it's the teams that have had that consistent offense when you get to this time of the season, the tournament time, the postseason, it's the teams, yes, you have to have pitching, but it's the teams that are swinging the bat, putting up the runs that are going to get you through, especially the first weekend of the regionals. Because if you get in that loser's bracket, it's about out slugging someone to get back into it and eventually win it. So that's where I think, Joe, your point was well taken, is this may be a good matchup for the Mississippi State team this week against Georgia, because they're going to put their runs up. They've just got to limit a Georgia team from scoring a lot of runs. And that's where, like I like in Arkansas, as we get deeper in the season, and like I talked about Oklahoma State, these are teams that are going to find enough pitching in those weekend series and postseason and then score a lot of runs on against some teams that may not be comparable offensively to them.
Yeah, that is one thing Oklahoma State does pretty well right now is swing the bats. They've got some nice pieces on the mound, starting with Jensen Elliott, who pitched really, really well Thursday night. But that is an offense that has many different ways it can hurt you. Before we leave the Big 12, Dave, I also wanted to mention Alek Manoah, another shutout, second straight shutout. He beats Kansas 1-0 on Saturday, throws a three-hitter, 15 strikeouts again. 31 straight scoreless innings, 41 strikeouts in his last three starts. He's 6-2 with a 1.81 ERA, 95 Ks, 15 walks, and 69 2/3 innings. I know we talked about him a little bit last week, but Dave, just what is Alek Manoah doing right now that has him as the hottest pitcher in the country?
Well, you kind of stole away from my shout out because I was going to do it the third week in a row.
He's too good for that.
Well, it's unbelievable his numbers he's put up, and it's kind of, you know, and I'll say this, because of where they're located, you know, out in West Virginia, a lot of people aren't talking about what he's doing over the last 3 weeks. And you said it perfectly, Teddy, over the numbers he has put up are phenomenal. And I turned on the game late in the game, it was a Saturday game because they got rained out Friday. Kansas got second and third in the ninth inning with no outs. And he goes punch out, ground out to short where the guy can score, and then ground out to first in the inning, and then Marcus Inman hits the walk-off home run to win. Just unbelievable for what he's doing. And I did a story on him, and I got to talk with him last week. And in his in my interview with him, it was amazing the calm that he had about himself. And what he credits it to is he compared to when he was, when I was with him in his sophomore year, he said, "Coach, I had all these high expectations. I was supposed to be the guy. I was supposed to be the guy. And I pitched to results every game." And he said, when he started the year against Kennesaw State and Georgia Southern, he was what he was supposed to be. And then when he went to Oregon State and played in Corvallis and had that loss against them in the opener, he said he went back to exactly how he was pitching his sophomore year, and it was about results. He was pitching against the defending national champion. He thought he had to be more than he was supposed to be. He was throwing changeups and sliders to the first hitter of the game. He gave Oregon State's offense way too much credit, he thought, and that was no disrespect to them. And he learned, he said, "I learned, Coach, out of that game not to ever go back to that again, to just be what I'm doing, win one pitch at a time. My stuff is good enough to beat anyone in the country, throw the ball over the plate," and that's what he's doing. And I thought it was a great answer to my question of what he thought had turned his season around. It wasn't this summer in the Cape like I thought it was, where he developed a harder slider, a more true slider, by watching videos. He said it was that Oregon State game that has turned his season around to where he's at today. And I thought his answers to my questions were, the maturity he showed was unbelievable on what he's about. And it's about his team. He said, "I didn't let myself down in the Oregon State game. I let my team down." He said, "Because if I would have been the Alec Manoah that I had been the first two starts of the year," he said, "we win that series. And how big is that for us now? We look back and we win 2 out of 3 on the road at Oregon State." So I was very amazed by the comments that he made, and I didn't say this to him, but I was really waiting to see how he performed against a Kansas team. And, you know, we know Kansas is lower in the standings in the Big 12, but how his mentality stayed the same coming off an Oklahoma State and a Texas Tech team that he dominated, and he did the same thing against Kansas.
I mean, that's outstanding to hear, you know, just the growth in the season that you can realize what went wrong against Oregon State and then use that and attack the rest of the year with that. I mean, that bodes well for him, not just this season and West Virginia, but as he goes into his professional career to have that kind of attitude and to learn that kind of lesson has to be very helpful as he goes and continues his baseball career, wherever that takes him next. Now, in the bit, we mentioned we had three teams coming in. We've already talked about Oklahoma State. We'll probably circle back to Tennessee at some point, but we've addressed Tennessee on the podcast before. A team that we have not really talked much about this year is Indiana. Now, the Hoosiers came into the year with some reasonably high expectations, especially in Bloomington, I think. In Jeff Mercer's first season, they returned an awful lot from last year's team, starting with Pauly Milto on the mound and big-time hitters like Matt Gorski and Matt Lloyd. And, you know, the Hoosiers had an okay start, I suppose. They had that tough series at Tennessee when they got swept. But really since then, Indiana's been playing a lot better. They're up to 27-13 overall, 9-3 in the Big Ten. Indiana going well in the Big Ten. They've already swept Iowa. They've series wins, in the rest of their Big Ten series. And, you know, they're looking like a team that certainly is going to compete at the top of the standings the rest of the way. I don't know that I'm ready to crown them the Big Ten favorites at, with a month to go. I think when you're looking at teams like Nebraska and Michigan, they're still going to have something to say about that. But Indiana definitely playing very good baseball right now. And as they continue to win, they also have improved their RPI. They're up to number 27. And if there's going to be a Big Ten host this year, it looks like it's probably the Hoosiers. And I don't think that it's going to happen necessarily. But if IU continues to roll through here, they have some opportunities to further improve that RPI, especially with road series at Illinois and Michigan. And they play a couple of nice midweek games here with Kentucky and Louisville. So if IU is able to continue this strong play that this level they've been at for the last month or so, some pretty good things could happen for the Hoosiers. Joe, just where are you at when you look at the Big Ten race? are the Hoosiers, have they established themselves as the favorite, or are they still fighting this out with a few other teams?
Yeah, it's kind of a jumbled mess at the top, which is fun. I mean, that's what makes kind of the end of the season fun. And the Big Ten is really a particularly messy league, too, because they only take eight teams to their conference tournament.
Which they absolutely need to fix.
Yeah, I mean, it's happened the last several years. Oh, no, I'm with you, though. I mean, every year there's a team that gets left out that could have won the thing.
They need to get to 10 teams. They don't need to get to 12. They need to get 10 teams. And I understand that would change the format, that they play a nice, crisp, double elimination, eight-team tournament there in Omaha. That needs to stop. The teams are no longer hurting themselves RPI-wise by taking a 10th team. Although this year I say that, and right now the 10th team would be, you'd have multiple RPIs over 100 in the tournament at that point. But there are too many times the cut line at eight is just leaves the ninth team out, and the ninth team is just as good, especially with the unbalanced Big Ten schedule, which, Joe, I know you want to get into a little bit as well. But I'm now just going back to one of my favorite Big Ten talking points, which is the tournament and it not being big enough. Also, while we're at it, add some divisions, Big Ten, get Wisconsin to add baseball. I'm done. Okay, go back to it, Joe.
That was good. No, that was good stuff. So I'm with you. And you kind of made you mentioned the unbalanced schedule, and that's to me one of the reasons why expansion makes some sense there, because the ninth team might have just played five of the six top teams in the conference, while the number eight team might not have. And I guess those are the breaks, and it's a 24-game schedule, so it's, you know, you figure some of that stuff washes out. But still, I'm with you in that expansion probably makes some sense there from a competitive standpoint, at least. So, but it is a jumbled mess at the top as well. And the good news about so there's four teams at the top that have really kind of separated themselves at least a little bit, and that's Indiana, Nebraska, 11-4, Michigan 8-3, and then Iowa at 9-6. And the good news about it is we do get a little bit of them playing each other. So I'm going to read some stuff off here, so just kind of hang with me. I know it's not great audio, but Indiana's got Minnesota, Illinois, Michigan, and Rutgers left. And that's, you mentioned it, Teddy, that's really not easy. And even Rutgers is sitting at 7-5 in the Big Ten. So, I mean, there have been years where you kind of look at Rutgers as a series where you can get right a little bit, but Rutgers is competitive there. So that's not going to be easy there. Nebraska, meanwhile, has Illinois, Northwestern, and Michigan. Michigan has Rutgers, Maryland, Indiana, and Nebraska. And then Iowa's an interesting one for me because those first three teams all kind of have tough go of it. I mean, Michigan's got to go through Indiana, Nebraska. Nebraska has to go through Illinois and Michigan. And Indiana's got kind of a gauntlet there as well. But Iowa has Ohio State, Michigan State, and Maryland. So really, it's kind of a situation where, you know, because of that, the unbalanced scheduling the rest of the way, Iowa might be in a better position than Nebraska or Michigan, just because that's kind of a softer road to get there. And it would create kind of an interesting postseason case if Iowa wins those three series and they win their series against UC Irvine, which is inserted in the middle of there, and their RPI is higher than you would expect it to be, but they win the Big Ten, but maybe not with the most impressive Big Ten record ever. What kind of case would that be from an at-large standpoint if you win that league but don't have some of the other metrics there? It's something we really haven't had to grapple with. You know, the Big Ten has improved across the board, and that's been expressed in getting more teams into the field of 64, but we haven't had to really grapple yet with this team won the conference, but there are three or four teams below them that have better metrics. We've kind of been spared of that, you know, like with Minnesota running away with things last year, and we've had some dominant champs in the past, so...
2016 Minnesota is your closest analog to that.
Yeah, that's
they got
that
in
right.
With like an RPI of 50 as a 2 seed, which was surprising, but you don't want to leave that to chance.
Right. Absolutely. So, you know, if you're making me pick now, I guess I would pick Indiana just because I kind of like some of the balance they have there. They are really kind of a well-balanced team. And if you made me go beyond that, it is such a, I mean, it sounds like a cop-out, but it really is just such a jumbled mess there at the top, and it's hard to really parse through that. And when we get right down to it, I mean, the conference champion is probably going to win the league by a game. That's really what it's going to come down to. But it's interesting that, you know, the team that's in fourth right now, Iowa, probably has the softest schedules to left to go, and then Indiana arguably has the toughest. So that's where the scheduling ends up mattering a whole lot this time of year.
Yeah, well, it'll be interesting to see how that race unfolds over the last month. The Big Ten last year obviously was not close, and that was the anomaly. It is usually one of these races that goes down to the final gun, partially because they just played 24 games, and it's a little unbalanced, as we've said. So that leads to some tight finishes seemingly every year. Dave, you earlier this year were at that Tennessee Indiana series. That feels like a lifetime ago now because it was the second weekend of the year. But at that time, could you see both of those teams ending up in the top 25? By the end of April.
Absolutely, I thought that when I was at that series, I thought these were two teams that eventually, when the season came close to the end, that they would be teams that would be battling not only for spots within their conferences, but also spots within the postseason. And I think with Indiana, and I use this excuse a lot about Northern teams, is that they were probably just out of the gym of the indoor facility, you know, with the weather up there. So their bats weren't, you know, it's an experienced team. They've got some experience. They've got some numbers, guys with numbers coming back. But at that time, it didn't seem like they were clicking. And obviously Tennessee's pitching staff was clicking at that time. So it was kind of an unfair evaluation, but you could see the pieces with them out there on the field, and you could see that as their team got more in the flow, that they were going to become a good team. Absolutely.
Yeah, that's it's been an interesting evolution for them, and you know, they're also at the time where, you know, Jeff Mercer, brand new coach there, and so I'm sure that there is some growing pains associated with that, just as he got used to the roster and kind of figured out where the pieces all fit best, and they got used to him, and now they are hitting their stride. They're 9-1 in the last 10, and they are into the top 25 at number 25. That is the Hoosiers. I want to just really quickly mention a couple things here with the Pac-12 and the ACC. It was a fun night of Pac-12 baseball on Thursday. There was a little Pac-12 after dark for opening night for all of the series last weekend, but ultimately Oregon State, Stanford, UCLA, Arizona State all came out with series wins. And so the top of the Pac-12 standings remain much the same as they were going into the weekend. It was an interesting weekend out there in that, you know, Cal really helped their RPI, getting a win at UCLA. Jared Horn was excellent on Friday night, pitching into the ninth inning against the Bruins. And you know, there's been some movement out there. Stanford really hurt Oregon and their postseason chances with a sweep in Eugene. Oregon's still looking relatively okay overall, but they're now under 500 in the league. So it was a quieter week in the Pac-12 ultimately, but, you know, with the top teams mostly humming right along, but some of the underlying things in that league are something to watch as Cal and Oregon battle out for spots in the NCAA tournament and spots in the Pac-12 standings. I also wanted to mention in the ACC, a couple surprises were Duke going to Clemson and sweeping a series, and Wake Forest beating NC State at home. NC State and Clemson had been two of the top teams in the ACC for the first half of the conference season, and now they have both suffered back-to-back series losses. Clemson back-to-back sweeps. It's been a rough stretch for the Tigers, but also the Wolfpack not doing so hot over the last few weeks here. And both of those teams have pretty well imperiled their hosting chances. Clemson's are actually probably dead at this point. NC State's are, you know, not too much better. And, you know, it's surprising to see that happen to those teams, but at the same time, the ACC's tough. And, neither of those teams has pitched particularly well the last two weekends, and it's very much caught up to them. As for Duke and Wake, those series wins mean that they are back in the postseason picture, especially Duke, I feel like. You know, Duke's up to 50 in RPI, and they're up to 11-10 in the ACC. So the Blue Devils are a team to watch. Wake Forest still has a little more RPI work to do. They're at 72. They're also 11-10 in the ACC. But that's become a lot more interesting over the last couple weeks. And also Miami made a nice RPI move just by going and winning a game at Louisville. They're up to 14 in the RPI. They're also 11-10 in the ACC. So they're probably going to need to improve that to really get into the hosting race. But if they can finish strong, the Hurricanes RPI is now sitting pretty with regards to hosting. So interesting times in the ACC. Did either of you have anything you wanted to touch on in either the PAC or the ACC there?
I'll say this. It goes back, and I don't mean to sound repetitive, but it goes back to what I said last week, that when you get to this time of the year and you're in conference, you don't want to get swept. It's very helpful for the team that sweeps. It's very hurtful for the team that gets swept. And obviously, Clemson has hurt themselves tremendously after the back-to-back weekend. And I kind of, it goes to show a little bit where talked about at the start of the year about it's not how you start, it's how you finish. And a lot of times that national champion is determined by what programs are starting to play good baseball now, will continue it through May and into June and deep into June. And I think we're starting to see some teams line up. You know, some teams are a little confusing because it's up and down weekends, but we're starting to see some teams around the whole country, not just alone in the ACC, that are starting to line up. And I think we're starting to see some separation. A lot of people forget now, you know, NC State, that unbelievable start is almost forgotten now because of their latest streak. And it's hurtful for them because this is not the time of year. You'd rather start out slow than kind of like Oklahoma State did and finish strong than start out great and then finish slow, because you remember what's happening in the most present. And right now, some of those teams in the ACC are going the wrong way, whereas a Duke and a Wake Forest are trending in the right direction.
So I'll get a little bit philosophical with it. And that's, I thought about this before, and I think because now there are midweek games, so it's a little bit different, but I think because college baseball is set up more similarly to college football than college basketball. So college basketball has games on Saturdays, you know, sometimes Sunday, but then you have a game on usually Tuesday or Wednesday, and then you're back again on Saturday. And college football, though, is just, for the most part, just on Saturday. I think college baseball, because the games are condensed for the most part on the weekends, I think we, that's the royal we, tend to look at them kind of on the college football sense, where a game happens and then because we're not going to have another game or anything of this importance for another week, we have to make sweeping opinions on that team and what happened just based on those three games. And I fall into that trap as well, where team wins a series in week one and, oh, what does it mean? And you know, we kind of draw these conclusions on that. Even if we give caveats like, well, it's still early and yada, 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 it's really an easy thing to do to kind of try to draw a conclusion and make meaning of what happened. And I think with Duke and Wake Forest kind of coming back, it's just a lesson that I need to learn as much as anybody else, just that see, you're going to lose series. Everyone is going to lose series. Everyone this season, with the exception, I guess, of, you know, UCLA and Stanford, have had series where they didn't look good at all. I mean, everyone has had that. And so that's just going to happen. In a lost series or a slow start is really very rarely in these big leagues like the ACC, is it something you can't overcome. If you start playing better in the second half, like because of the nature of the RPI and the league being what it is and the quality of games you're going to get, if you get it going at any point, before late April, you're probably in pretty decent shape. And so it's certainly better late than never in the ACC. And that's kind of what we're learning with Duke and Wake Forest. And don't look now, but, you know, we spent a lot of time talking about the ACC was a little bit top heavy, but it kind of feels like now we've got this middle class figured out a little bit, where Duke and Wake Forest are coming up. Florida State's playing better. Clemson and NC State are falling back to the pack a little bit. There's still some teams like a Virginia, for example, that we kind of talked about as being a field of 64 team that maybe wound up getting there in the end. But there's maybe a little bit more depth in the conference than we were probably giving it credit for just 4 or 5 weeks ago.
Yeah, it's it always seems to shake out that way in the end. You know, I know, Joe, you've mentioned it before that, you know, some of the question marks that you have during the preseason, you know, seem to get papered over in non-conference, and then what do you know, conference play comes around and they get exposed. And that's true at almost any level of team. That's not just the top end teams beating up on lower end teams. That's that's everyone, it feels like. Once you get into conference play, once you start playing these teams that know you a little better, they know how to find your weaknesses and exploit them. And some of that is just that, you know, the season's kind of long, and eventually that stuff does come creeping back up. And maybe that's what we're seeing a little bit here as we get towards the end of April with some of these teams. But before we get too philosophical here, let's get into our shout-outs. That time of the podcast where we, you know, mentioned players, programs that we haven't really gotten into as much as we'd like to so far, and that are deserving of some attention. So, Dave, what do you have for us this week?
First off, I'd like to congratulate Bill Kinneberg of Utah, getting win number 600 in a victory on Saturday over Arizona State in a series that obviously was favored to Arizona State, but I think it ended up becoming a much better series. And I think, and Utah had a chance to win that game on Thursday, but he picked up win number 600. Mike Bianco winning number 737, which puts him fourth on the all-time SEC coaches record list. And he's one away from becoming tied with number three with the great Ray Tanner. So congratulations to Mike Bianco and his longevity at Ole Miss. I kind of shied away from it when you brought up Indiana, Tennessee, because I knew that I was going to put a shout out to them. The Vols are now 9-9 in the SEC, 500 for the first time in many, many years, an RPI of number 8 after the sweep of Kentucky, 30 wins. I think that I believe they're 30-11, putting together a great resume. I'm really excited not only for the team, but the community, the university, and many of the players that I have relationships with that were recruited when I was there, and I spent my last year, which was many of their first years. I'm really happy for those guys because it's a great group of young men, and obviously they have matured and developed into very good players, and I'm very happy for what they're establishing in the 2019 season. And then, again, I'll repeat, you stole my thunder, but Alec Manoah, I think he's done something not just this past weekend, over the last 3 weeks, Teddy, and I want to give another shout out because the resume he's put together over the last 3 weeks and throughout the whole season, but the last 3 weeks are tremendous. And not only is he continuing to move up many teams' draft boards, or he should be, I think he's putting himself in a category now where he could be a guy that may be able to be talked about as maybe a Golden Spikes finalist or the pitcher of the year. He's just putting together something that is pretty special with dominance of Big 12 hitters and hitters around the country. So congratulations to all those.
Absolutely. Joe, what do you got?
Well, so I spent this past weekend in Louisville and in that area. It was kind of all around Kentucky and southern Indiana. And where I live now in Illinois is kind of on the eastern edge of the central time zone. So it was kind of a neat change to be in Louisville where you're on the western edge of the eastern time zone, because it just gets dark way later, which is a double-edged sword. It's kind of like robbing Peter to pay Paul a little bit, where it was kind of cool that, you know, when the game were between Miami and Louisville that got suspended in the sixth inning on Friday night was officially suspended, and it was like almost 8:30 and it was still pretty light outside. That was kind of nice. But then there's that weird second part of that, which is when the sun's been down like all of, I don't know, an hour and a half or 2 hours, and you're like, is it really that late? That can't be right. So just kind of a weird little time zones are weird, I guess, is what I'm saying. Also, shouts to the Louisville Press Box Snacks. Great snack spread. So shout out to that. One other non-baseball thing. I was at University of Evansville for their games against Indiana State yesterday. Really enjoyed it. It was a beautiful afternoon. Really enjoyed my time in Evansville. Fascinating school, University of Evansville, just as an institution. First of all, really tucked into the neighborhood they're in, to where if the buildings weren't labeled University of Evansville, you might not know it was a university. Part of that is because the school is not that big, as I found out. 2,600 students at University of Evansville. Baseball stuff. Jake Sanford, Western Kentucky. We talked about him. He's the kid from Nova Scotia who I mentioned when Western Kentucky was really hot earlier in the season. As a team, they have cooled off a little bit. Still playing pretty well, but they've cooled off. But Jake Sanford has not. And he has a chance to be the first ever Triple Crown winner in Conference USA history, which sounded surprising to me. But then you kind of realized, well, you know, Conference USA has only been around since 1996, and it's kind of had like a shifting membership. So some players you might have thought would have done it, you know, you have to think, well, was that team in Conference USA at the time? So on and so forth. But right now he is hitting .408 with 18 home runs and 55 RBI. He hit two of those home runs while I was there on Saturday. So it was very nice of him to do that while I was there so I could see with my own eyes. And boy, that power is real. That is a big, strong kid. One of them, I just lost the ball. Like, I couldn't follow the path of the ball. I mean, it was kind of a gray day, so that's part of it. But so he's currently leading in all three of those categories, and none of them are really all that close right now. You know, he's 27 points up on average. He's got seven more home runs than the next highest total, and he's up in RBI by six. So he's really kind of in a good position to do that. So that would be kind of a cool deal for him to be the first ever in Conference USA. Quickly, we're at the time of year where midweek games have kind of come into focus, and I know I'm probably the foremost midweek game enthusiast of the three of us on here. But I enjoy midweek games all year long, but now you're really at a point where they start to take some. All the games are equally important. It's something I've talked about, but now we kind of know what the ramifications are. So just a few real quick, Georgia Tech in Georgia this week at SunTrust Park. If Georgia Tech wants to continue to build a host resume, I think this is a big one for them. Nebraska at Creighton, that's always a game that draws a lot of fans. It's kind of a fun atmosphere. But beyond that, Creighton, and I tweeted this, kind of like a stealth host candidate. I don't think it's going to happen. But if they were to really, really get hot and finish, you know, super strong, you know, there's a scenario where that could be something, but certainly winning a game like this is huge. FAU at Florida. I talked to John McCormick over the weekend because FAU was playing at Western Kentucky, and he acknowledged the situation they're in. He thinks their team is good. I think their team is good, but the metrics just haven't quite caught up. They've played a lot of home games. That's been a big part of that. Conference USA maybe isn't as strong in terms of depth. That's part of it too. So a midweek game against Florida, you can bet the Gators are going to get FAU's very best shot in this game because they know they need these wins. And for evidence of how much they know they need wins, they to close out the series against Western Kentucky yesterday, they brought back Blake Sanderson, their Friday starter, to pitch in relief on Sunday. It was a short start on Friday, so it wasn't any sort of abuse situation, but that just tells you how much they felt like they needed that series. So they know they need it. UC Irvine taking on Southern Cal. Southern Cal might not strike you as a major win, but we talked about this a couple weeks ago that UC Irvine doesn't have a lot left on their schedule in front of them. So any games you can get against top 100-ish RPI teams when you're in their position is big. And then UT Arlington playing at A&M. Don't look now, but UT Arlington has kind of elbowed its way into the at-large discussion. And winning a midweek game against A&M would be a huge step in that direction for the Mavericks.
Yeah, we're also in a weird spot with midweek games this time of year because a lot of the Southern schools are just about done with them, or they're like they only have like one or two left, and the Northern schools are all like, oh, this is when we're starting to play them. So just it's an interesting contrast this time of year where just depending on what part of the country you're in, how many midweek games you're dealing with on your schedule right now. I want to mention, first of all, I just saw this while we've been recording the podcast. Whoever at Ole Miss is in charge of their, I assume, marketing on social media, they're having, like many schools do, they're having their annual awards coming up, I guess, tonight. And in promotion of that, they've created some movie posters with some famous movie posters that remixed with Ole Miss, and we have Step Brothers with Mike Bianco and Carl Lafferty as the two Step Brothers, and that picture is phenomenal. So thank you for Carl Lafferty with an afro as John C. Reilly. Want to mention Kansas State. On consecutive weekends now, Kansas State has won series against Texas and TCU. It's the first time since 2009 that K-State has won back-to-back series against ranked teams. And K-State has surged in the RPI as a result. They still have a lot of work to do to make the postseason, starting with getting their record, which is 19-22, above 500 overall. But regardless of whether or not they're able to really continue this surge or not, this has been, they're showing impressive fight, I guess, under first-year coach Pete Hughes, and to continue to be building on this momentum throughout the second half would I think be significant for the Wildcats, you know, both this season and as that program moves forward under Pete Hughes. Also, Maine on Friday played one of the wilder games that we'll see, certainly the wildest games of the weekend. Nick Silva, Maine's senior right-hander, this is a 7-inning game. Nick Silva threw a no-hitter, but it wasn't a win until Ryan Terrain, who is a freshman, hit a walk-off pinch-hit grand slam to give Maine a 4-1 win over UMass. Terrain had one RBI to his name before that, but he got the call to pinch hit, and he delivers his first career home run in absolutely unforgettable fashion. Then I also want to mention J.J. Bleda, Vanderbilt's right fielder, who last week hit 5 home runs. He homered in all 4 of the Commodores games. That home run binge, which really dates back to last month, has seen him get into a tie for the national lead. He's up to 20 overall, tied with Tulane's Cody Hosey. So those two guys duking it out in what has become a very exciting national home run race. Arizona State's Hunter Bishop still up in that mix as well. So that's something to watch going forward. Bleda also really lifting his draft stock over the last several weeks here as he continues to hit and show more power than he has really to this point in his career. It's a little bit of a Trevor Larnach type season from Bleda, which listeners of the Baseball America podcast may remember. Somebody on this podcast, oh, it was me, mentioned way back in the fall, that comparison. So so that brings us to the end of this week's, wrapping up this week's games. Looking ahead, Joe gave you a rundown of some exciting midweek games. This weekend features Georgia and Mississippi State, like I mentioned, Creighton and Xavier in an intriguing Big East showdown. And we've got Oklahoma State going to Texas Tech, another big series in the Big 12. We will be back here next week to talk about all of that and more. So you remember to subscribe to the Baseball America podcast on your favorite app, and then it'll pop right up into your feed for you. And while you're there, if you have time and the inclination, please give us a rating and a review, or one or the other. They help other people to find the podcast, and it helps us to know what you guys think of the podcast. So if you have time, just hit that 5-star button. We would greatly appreciate it. You can follow us on Twitter. I am at Ted Cahill. Dave is at Dave Serrano 11, and Joe is at Joe_on_sports. We will be back here next week, as I mentioned, with the next edition of the Baseball America College podcast. Until then, remember to check everything out over at baseballamerica.com. Get all of your college baseball fix throughout the week. There will be a new projected field of 64 on Wednesday. I know everyone is very excited about that this time of year. And there will be plenty of other great stories to keep you busy until we are back on the podcast. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only, not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.